Welcome to Just for Context, where host Steve Filler talks to esteemed professionals from the digital marketing industry all about the wide and colourful scope that is modern contextual advertising.
We're delighted today to be joined by Connor Tuttle from Mediacom, Programmatic Associate Director International. So thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
So I wonder if we could just start by you giving an intro to yourself, your career to date, and your current role at Mediacom.
Yeah, of course. So I've been working in media now for 6 years, which feels quite scary, but also at the same time feels like I haven't really even scraped the surface just yet. I started my career off at Dentsu, where I was part of Amnet, and I was there for 2 years. I then moved over to Mediacom 4 years ago, in which I've had the pleasure of working across Adidas for 2 years, then Uber for a year, and currently I'm heading up the Coca-Cola team across EMEA, which Mediacom won, fortunately, at the start of this year. So, yeah, it's been a busy year so far, but still trying to battle through and really start delivering some value for Coca-Cola, which is a beast in itself.
Yeah. Well, some lovely brands there to have been working with. And yeah, so deep in that wonderful Q4 push, still looking fresh. That's a good start. So
I've just done it for today. Normally the hair's all over the place, mate.
So I wanted to start. So obviously, the focus of this podcast is around context, contextual, but kind of keen to kind of start by just getting your agency perspective on, I suppose, the role of contextual targeting and how that might have evolved alongside other targeting strategies over the last few years with developments that we've seen with Google, et cetera, cookies. So yeah, keen to get the kind of the bigger picture view, I guess, to start.
I think where I joined back in 2016, I think from there to where we are now is completely different. And I think that there's a few things along the way that have kind of forced our strategic hand into how we think about contextual advertising. I think that the first one will be GDPR in 2018 coming around. And I think that that was the first point for me, because when I first started off in media and working in programmatic, a campaign would be given to me and I could then go and select any third-party data sources, any sources from the DSP, and just bundle all that in, whack it on, hopefully it works, and then assess performance afterwards. It was only when GDPR came around that people was like, hang on a second, we might not be able to do this anymore for much longer. And I think that really forced people's hands to thinking differently, because I think people were so used to just having all these data points at their disposal and then realizing actually this might not be the right way to do things for a start, and it might not even be the legal way to do things in a few months' time. I think after GDPR, we saw a kind of a quick shift into everyone moving to contextual, and then it's slowly coming back audience-led for a part of it. But I think that jarring the door open there was enough for people to think, actually, there's not one route to success here, there's two. And then I guess that evolved even further until this year, when it's meant to be the death of the cookie, and it felt like we was doing it all over again. It was like, right, hang on, we're going to be in trouble again, let's make sure we're moving things across. But at that point, since we've then had a few years of working contextually, it was like, okay, we don't need to panic our clients, they're already buying contextually. And the best thing about the kind of the death of the cookie, which now hasn't happened, but it still led to numerous cookieless tests, which means that people are kind of bulletproof when it does happen. And I think when GDPR was around, there wasn't those tests in place. It was just like, it was shut down and meltdown in the agencies because we can't use these audiences anymore. Whereas now we've got key partners that we know we can tie contextually with. If we want to go an audience-led route, there's ways to do that as well with a cookieless approach. But I think that that's where we kind of see it now. Whenever it comes up within plans, it's never just an audience buy. It always is audience and context, or splitting the two out and making sure we're covering both patches, which when I started just didn't happen.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. It's good to be prepared and ready for sure. And for someone like Coca-Cola, how important is contextual targeting or context in general for a brand like that?
I think it's super important for them, which I'm sure every client would say. I think when it comes to it, for Coke, the key ones that spring to mind will be that Coca-Cola obviously have their master brand than every other brand under the sun. So they've got your Fantas, your Sprites, and you're going to your Powerades, etc. And each one of them will have more of a kind of aligned context. If you look at Fanta, for example, they're very heavily into gaming, whereas you look at Coca-Cola, they're much more into sport. And then as you go through the brand, you get other brands that then do music support in terms of festivals and whatnot. So it's very important from them, I think, from a targeting approach and being around the right context. It's also extremely important to kind of avoid the wrong context. We're bound in EU by HFSS restrictions, which means you can't advertise to those under the age of 18. But also alongside that, we don't then want to be in places that, you know, it could be that the cookie's telling us that the person's over 18, but in fact, it's a children's site. So we need to make sure that we're delivering things in the right way. So I guess it's a balance between making sure that the brand is in the right context for resonating with our audience, but also being brand safe on the other side of things so that we're not being put in the press for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes perfect sense. And I guess kind of on a practical level, and yeah, without wanting to give away any of the kind of key secrets, for someone like Coca-Cola, I mean, we're just coming up to the wonderful festive season, and Coca-Cola always been renowned for sort of, you know, brilliant storytelling around sort of Christmas. Like, how do you approach sort of contextual and you know, what's the role of contextual for something like that that's more of a sort of festive burst? Is it about finding the right audience, or how do you start to plan that?
I think Coke in this scenario becomes a bit of an anomaly to any other client that I've ever worked across for Christmas, because of their holidays are coming ad. I think because that's so nostalgic and everyone resonates with it, you know that various contexts will work, and you also know that other contexts you'll be able to kind of tie it in because of how people are feeling. Because of that, you probably will shift more along the side of, we know that we don't directly want people online to buy Coca-Cola because that's not the path to conversion we're looking for, but it's starting assigning the points of Christmas that people resonate with the brand. So if they are doing a shop, they're like, okay, fine, we want to get Coca-Cola because we're going to have it with our alcoholic beverages, or we're going to have it with our dinner, or we're going to do it with other different bits and pieces. I think the thing that we're looking at this year, alongside standard online video routes of shopper context, family context, food context, is starting to look at, okay, we know they've got this ad that is absolutely incredible every time it becomes on the telly since, I think it's, what is it, 1971? Well, let's now put that onto CTV, because that's a really growing device in the market. If we're going to get it on terms of our traditional TV buy, let's move it across onto CTV as well where possible, so we can get that incremental reach, but also kind of start to deliver across a device that we know is trying to kind of break down the barriers of linear TV as well.
Yeah, I makes sense. And you mentioned CTV, and I guess, how easy is it for you as an agency? There's so many different players in the space. I mean, you obviously will, you know, work with a select group of partners, but how easy is it for you to sort of, first of all, I guess, create consistency across your plan and really sort of evaluate and kind of get under the bonnet of how people approach it and you know, who's the real deal, and how do you need to evolve your approach based on the partner selection?
Yeah, I guess to answer it quite simply, it's not easy at all. I think that with a lot of things, and I think contextually as well, aside from CTV, but for clients, contextual makes loads of sense when you've got a big name brand slapped in front of you on a media plan, right? So if you're talking Spotify, the client gets it. Vivo, client gets it. If we start looking into a media owner that accumulates partners together and then delivers that supply as a collective, but doesn't have that name brand involved, it's very hard for a client to go, okay, that makes sense, I know who they are. And then you have to really get into the weeds of it by delivering the channels we're serving across, the environments, the context, what we're looking at there. So it is difficult.
Yeah. And so you mentioned CTV there a couple of times. I guess, yeah, it's been a hot topic this year. How has the importance of CTV changed for a brand like Coca-Cola and in terms of its role in your plans at the moment?
it's one that I think we're dabbling with, and we're kind of, again, just touching the surface of it. I think what's always important is when you look at Coca-Cola that will buy across offline and online media, is they'll want to understand how to replicate off of linear TV and then deliver further on CTV. And I think that's the kind of bridge that we need to cover. But I also think that we need to kind of look at it as an entity in a way. People have consumed things very differently from linear TV to CTV. Linear TV, a lot of people now record things and will skip all the adverts, whereas CTV, you can't do that. And again, I think, like I said, it falls down to a measurement thing of, we need to be able to say as and why we can do this. Another one that comes to mind is audio, right? Audio is something that we also want to do, but in terms of telling Coca-Cola how successful it is, it's very limited to do it unless you're able to run a brand study. So I think that moving into next year, that's something we'll be doing a lot more. From working on Uber last year, they had brand studies on every single activation, which made it really easy to deliver to the client saying whether it worked or not. And I think that's what we need to do now on Coca-Cola. I guess the other thing is kind of the education piece about what we're serving on CTV. Is it that it's SVOD? Is it that it's over the top? What are we doing? Because CTV is an umbrella at the moment. There's so many things underneath it. And I think that you can get a CTV buy of a CPM of 10. You could probably also go all the way up to a CPM of like 50. And it might look on the face of it, it's just more expensive. But it depends what you're buying. Because if you're buying an SVOD at a 50 euro CPM versus just a kind of throwaway app at a 10 euro CPM, what are you really buying in terms of what you're delivering? The one thing I do struggle slightly with on CTV, which has evolved, is the granularity of reporting. It seems to be, it will say, we've delivered against this app or on this channel, but it can't tell you exactly what program was on or what placement you was in and stuff like that. And I think that as well in normal contextual advertising is a massive limitation, right? When it comes to going back to the client and reporting, if we're not able to report to the kind of really granular point of where we're delivering, the significance of context kind of loses its spark for me. I think especially within DSPs, if we look at a standard contextual buy, if we're only able to say we delivered on the dailymail.co.uk, because we can't report on subdomains in the DSP, and the client looks at that and goes, but you told me you were delivering on only Premier League football sports content. And we're like, oh yeah, well, the report doesn't say that, but really, that is where we should be. That's where we need partners to step in and be like, this is exactly where you delivered, which is why it's delivering to your campaign's KPIs, rather than saying, this is where you delivered. We are telling you it's there, but our report can't show that.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I guess kind of in the CTV space, I mean, we've seen from our perspective, I guess when we moved into the space, it was clear there was quite a lot of limitations in terms of targeting capabilities. And I think, thankfully, the fact that even though, you know, we see, and I'm sure you see the same, it's sometimes sort of split between AV teams and programmatic or digital teams, it seems that the almost kind of the high expectations or sort of standards that we've come used to in digital hopefully are helping to accelerate the movement in terms of CTV being able to be more granular in terms of reporting, targeting capabilities. So you seeing that kind of, does it feel like that's evolving at a good pace?
I don't know whether I would be the expert to say what the pace is good or bad, I guess. I think that you're right when it comes to like AV teams and our teams, is that you're trying to kind of cross over the barriers of where it sits, and it's all agency politics. I think it's definitely getting better. I mean, I ran a CTV campaign a few years ago on Adidas with a partner who couldn't tell me where it delivered at all. It was just within their threshold of, these are the channels we serve across. Whereas now it's got to the point where we can say, okay, These are the channels we are serving across, and we've refined that down. I think in terms of the players in the market, everyone's coming to market with CTV. I think that the one thing that would be great would be to see the real USPs per partner. We know we can deliver CTV with various people. That's fine. But why are we doing it with you over someone else? What is it that we can make sure we're doing? And also, what is your roadmap? Because if we can start getting the ball rolling now with you, and we know, okay, this is where we start, at the end of the year, we're going to be able to deliver these new targeting segments or in these new channels we're onboarding, and we're also able to report it this way, and we can do, again, we're not badgering on about brand studies, but we can find a brand study. That for a client is going to be a really nice roadmap from a media perspective, but also an agency perspective, to show that path we've came on, rather than scattering partners all throughout the year and not having a consistent story to tell.
Yeah, so you mentioned brand studies there. So in terms of measurement, and I guess, yeah, I'm thinking here, whether it's contextual, you know, video, anything that you're kind of running in digital, have there been any kind of big shifts? Obviously, you know, brand studies have been around for years, but we've now seen a kind of a big rise in terms of thinking about attention. Like, what does that suite of reporting tools look like now for you, and how's that evolved?
I think in terms of brand studies, they're a blessing and a curse. And I think it's definitely a blessing and a curse for the larger brands. So the same problem I faced on Adidas and Uber and now on Coca-Cola is your baselines are going to be so high because they are worldwide brands. So although they sound like the kind of solution to all the problems, by rather than looking at VTR, we can see a shift in awareness. Well, if 90% of the majority of the markets of people that we know already know the brand, that awareness shift is going to be very, very hard to move. And you're going to have to invest a lot of money to do that. I think that at the moment, a lot of trading teams, ourselves included, will rely heavily on the DSP functionality to do these brandish studies. What I learned through Uber, which I think really put a challenge onto those partners we were running brand studies with, was everything had to be statistically significant. So we had to have a pool of people that would represent the rest of the country with the statistics that we accumulated, which meant that some partners who done a study to a panel of 50 people can't use that data because that could be a complete anomaly. And I think that was the perfect way of looking about it. And it made it really difficult to get statistical data sometimes when the questions were slightly harder, when you're looking at more consideration or purchase intent, especially for the likes of Uber Rides versus Uber Eats and all of the players they have in that market. But I think that's the kind of precedent that people should put in place, is that unless this is statistically significant, this should not be a brand new study we're running, because you can't go away and say, oh yeah, we've shifted awareness by 20% in the UK from a panel of 50 people, when the UK is much larger than that. You need to cross people across demographics and whatnot. Otherwise, it's too broad of a statement to make and it can be inaccurate.
And then how about kind of the in sort of importance or sort of any shift in thinking about attention? Is that kind of part of the sort of the journey yet?
I think can we actually back that up with a further analysis with a metric like attention? And I think that's something we want to start testing and looking into. Next year, we'll be looking into running more activity across the UK as well. And I think that will be our market, in which we know Mediacom UK had Coca-Cola for several years before it became a central client. They've already started doing some testing into attention. So we'd like to keep that going and see where it goes within the market. But I think, yeah, attention is going to be key for a lot of clients. But I think it will be interesting to see the kind of anomalies between attention and viewability and why they are different and what conversations that can stimulate. I think for a long time, especially working on Adidas, where it's more of an e-commerce client, there were thresholds to ensure we was delivering at a highly viewable rate. But for other e-commerce clients, they look at it a different way by going, well, let's not worry about the viewability, because if lower down the page, I'm still going to get attention to my ad, and then they might go through and convert, that's fine. So I think attention could really play a key role in that, of actually changing the focus of just a viewable ad, but maybe one that's not viewable, but then is gauging attention later on in the process of someone reading through their content or whatever they're doing, and then able to then make a path to conversion for those more DR clients.
Yeah, I guess even if it's in its most sort of basic form, attention is going back to your earlier point, it's a measure of media quality, right? It's kind of, yeah. Even if it's a sort of cross-section of domain and placement on the page, it's a pretty good start. So then, in terms of kind of keeping on the Christmas theme, then thinking specifically around sort of Coca-Cola, any sort of favorite Coca-Cola Christmas ads of all time?
I'm going to be really cliche here, because I sat there a couple of nights ago and no one was going to speak about this and was scrolling through. I don't think you can beat the Coca-Cola Christmas ad. I think holidays are coming. I think it came out in 1971. Every ad following on from that is pretty much the same. And I think that this ad is so different to what we're told within our industry and also within all of the advertising industries, of that this ad shouldn't work. It should be done in a few years' time. Everyone bangs on about creative fatigue, and it needs a call to action. It needs to tell the consumers why. It needs to tell the consumers what the brand is doing and delivering. This ad doesn't do any of that, and we do it every year and slap it on the telly. And then we're also now moving it into digital as well. But it really encapsulates what Christmas is and has been to a lot of people. I know that they say that Father Christmas was green and now he's red because of Coca-Cola. And I think this ad obviously played a massive part in kind of delivering that message as well. But when I was thinking about it as well, and the mediums it goes across, you automatically think of TV, right? And you think of when it comes on, it goes, holidays are coming, and you're like, okay, and you all start getting along and the kids are jumping up and having a great time. Look at it on a digital perspective, right? I think that we're moving into a time in which audio on is going to become a lot more important in terms of online video delivery. But I also think this ad just kind of says no to that. I think that in a way, you don't need sound on for this scenario, because you will see it. And in your head, you'll always be doing, holidays are coming. And you'll be like, okay, fine. So then that plays into your outstream ads that don't have sound on or initiate sound on. So you can still work with that. And I think that, again, just makes this ad even more significant, of that it just defies so many principles that we constantly go on about when creating creatives. This ad says no to all of them and is probably one of the most famous ads of all time.
Yeah, I guess it's reassuring, right, as well. It's sort of Christmas has started when you see the Coca-Cola ads. You've watched Elf for the first time. It's all kind of right. We're ready to enjoy. And then, so forgetting, final question, forget sort of Coca-Cola's iconic ads for 1 second. In terms of sort of Christmas ads you've seen this year, kind of anything that you sort of think, wow, really resonates, or you're thinking that would be a kind of a fun one to be able to sort of plan or work across?
I think my favourite outside of Coca-Cola is John Lewis's The Beginner ad this year, which again might sound really cliche because you've got the two front runners of Christmas ads going side by side. As a parent, I mean, that kind of absolutely sucker punch at the end of it when you realize what the ad's about. I won't do any spoilers now, but I think John Lewis is another one that's kind of challenging Coke in a way of that people anticipate that ad every year. And when it comes on, like I heard about it in the morning when I was on Teams and everyone rushed over to YouTube to watch it. I think that the good thing about John Lewis every year is it always is emotive, and it also is something that families can watch and children will understand it. You had that with the likes of Edgar the Dragon a few years ago with the penguins and whatnot. And then also with the parents that will know the more kind of the deeper meaning to it. And I think this ad this year, just from conversations we're having internally about delivering into kind of diverse environments and whatnot, is it that we, for this campaign, I'd love to have been across it, where can we deliver this contextually that is sensitive but also makes sense? And plays into that message of, you know, balancing out between the two of brand suitability and brand safety. Obviously, when you're thinking about fostering, et cetera, you probably could come across a lot of negative articles. So how do you put it somewhere where it's also going to play a nice key role? And the other good thing I think John Lewis done this year, when I did see it, is that every other year they've done merchandise, right? So my little girl has an Edgar John Lewis dragon that she takes to bed every night. And when I saw this ad, I was like, please don't tell me they're going to do a skateboard. Please don't say they're going to try and make money with it. And they haven't. And this year is the first year in a very long time. So I think that may be some of the feedback they've got, where they've kind of been like, your ad is more of a promotion for a product, whereas this year it's been spamming its head. And I'm glad they didn't do a bit of merch alongside it, because I think it would have been a bit distasteful. So
No, it's good. It's a good answer. And actually, interestingly, I think going to your point about audio, and I don't know if this was planned when they produced it, but I watched that ad the first time with no sound on, and I was just in bed watching it. And actually, even at the end, then you had like a little lump in your throat. You're like, wow. And that's pretty impressive to be able to deliver that storytelling without music, without any kind of, the emotive part of it. So whether that's amazing strategy or just coincidence, we'll never know. Nice answer.
He'll write it down as amazing strategy for sure. I certainly would. We planned that.
Yeah, let's claim that one, definitely. Look, it's been amazing to talk. Thank you so much. It's really interesting. Appreciate you taking the time. Thank you. And look forward to seeing that Coca-Cola ad sometime soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to our latest episode of Just for Context. We hope we have topped up your contextual tank just a little. For more information about Show Heroes and our contextual tools, including Show Hero Semantic Hero, which is our very own AI-driven semantic technology, please head to our website, showheroes.com. You can also find us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Also, make sure to listen out for our other podcasts. See you soon!
There were nights we would fight, no end in sight, nothing was right.